Bhagavad Gita, as we have been saying, is scripture to guide us towards achieving the goal of our life. We all want to live a life directed to the goal. There should be a definite purpose to our life. And for them alone, Bhagavad Gita becomes meaningful. For those who do not feel any conscious need to have this, don't reduce that. Let that light be like this. Yes, turn it up, otherwise it will start dimming. Just turn it like, let it remain like this. Otherwise, turn it off. So, if we do not have any inclination towards achieving the goal of life, or even to lead a purposeful life, then Bhagavad Gita cannot be of much use. This is therefore told to Arjuna, who had a definite purpose. He wanted to lead a successful life, not a life doomed to failure. And therefore the guidance was useful in his life. I am sure we all want that. This precious life we don't want to waste in just roaming about. We do not want that this thing be just a waste of time. Shut it off if it is not working. Completely shut it off. Okay, that's better. And if possible, you can increase this light. So, as we have been seeing, that we have the instruments, but the proper use of those instruments is to be undertaken. Just having the instruments is one thing, and knowing how to use them is another thing. Like I have very good computers, but I don't know all the uses, how to put it to every use. A little use that I can make of it. So, one needs to know that how all those different features of it can be used. Also, one should have control over it. And third, most important thing, that while we should have the control over these instruments, utmost care needs to be taken not to make those instruments rule over us. What happens is that we start getting ruled by them. We take an instrument and then become slave to it. Even to the external instruments, we see that we get them for us. And later on, what happens is, in many cases, they start governing us. We become addicted to them, slave to them, and instead of being our instruments, we become just playthings in their hands. Therefore, this is a great message that we saw being given into this verse number 67, that the sense organs are there, to tell us what are the properties of different things around us, so that we can choose whatever we want from that. Now, these sense organs, if they get attached to the objects, they cannot do their work properly. They are dragged then towards the object rather than just sensing them. The sensitivity is their job. They should give us the exact knowledge, but they should not get dragged towards those objects unless we conscientiously want to do that. But that doesn't happen. The eyes should tell me exactly what color that object is of, what the shape that object has, the measurements and distance and all that. That is the function of eye. Eye should tell me just that. It should not make me run towards the object. That is becoming, if that happens, that by seeing the object, it instinctively starts running after it without my control over it, then I become a slave to those things. The objects then start dragging the sense organs. So now they are not in control, they are not in charge. The external objects become the controllers of the sense organs. Also, the mind is superior to these organs. Mind should be kept free from their drags. If that doesn't happen, then the mind starts getting dragged behind that. And intellect of a person who, that intellect's job is to decide what is right and what is not right. What is beneficial for my pursuit of the goal of life and what is detrimental for that? That is to be decided by the intellect. But when intellect, instead of deciding that, just starts following or getting dragged behind the mind, then, well, it doesn't perform its function. And thus all these instruments, they become not only useless, but detrimental. Useless is one thing, it is lying just without creating any problem at least. It is, if it is just a lump of say clay is just lying there, is not making any problem, that is all right. But if it is say a snake, then not only that if you are not able to control it, it is just keeping it is not safe, it will create problems in our life. So similarly, these instruments not controlled, they play havoc in one's life. And it is here said that whichever of the wandering senses of the mind follows, that one carries away his wisdom as the wind carries a ship on the sea. Shankaracharya, in his beautiful commentary on this, mentions this, that what happens here is this yati. He uses the word they, one who is making an attempt, one who wants to realize goal in life, because for them it is told, not for all and sundry. So for those people who are making an effort in a proper way are two different things. One can be making effort, but not scientifically, then the chances of success are reduced. If one is making effort in a proper manner, scientifically, connecting the means and the end, then those efforts tend to be successful. So, Shankaracharya says this particular spiritual aspirant, if he does not control the sense organs from running after the objects, does not properly organize his different aspects of personality, the mind should be in charge of the sense organs, the intellect, the faculty that decides what is right and wrong, should be in charge of the mind. Then that arrangement is right. But if the arrangement is reversed, that the objects, they drag the sense organs, then the mind gets dragged behind them, and the intellect gets dragged behind them, then a very sharp intellect, very capable intellect also is not able to perform the function that it is meant to perform. It becomes slave to the sense organs. It is like giving our best, most efficient weapons to our enemies. So it is, the warning is given here by Lord that what happens in case if the intellect gets dragged behind the mind like this, this person then loses this spiritual pursuit. They, like a ship caught in a storm, loses the way. So similarly, when the sense objects drag the mind, then a big storm is generated, and then intellect gets dragged into it. It doesn't have then a proper faculty of judging what is right and what is not right, what is beneficial for the pursuit of my goal and what is not beneficial. It gets caught into this storm and loses the way in life. One may say that, do I not get pleasures from my sense objects? When the objects are caught by the sense organs, then I get happiness. Should I not go for those the pieces of happiness in life? I know life is full of suffering, but when I get these glimpses of happiness, and when my sense organs want to catch those objects, why should I control? Let them have pleasure. The trouble is they are not going to get pleasure. They are only going to get trapped. This is the problem that comes. One must be careful about this. And because we are not careful about that, very sharp intellects, like that of brilliant scientists and other people, what happens? In spite of that brilliance, they can understand how and may write beautiful books about how the mind gets dragged and all that. They can write a nice psychological book on such subjects, do lot of research on how the brain works and all that. But where the practical life goes, because the intellect is the slave to the sense organs, after their work in laboratory, the mind goes to the sense objects. All intellect becomes slave. See, what is the purpose of science? Science goes into technology. Means what? Just please analyze, friends. In studying science, we have understood that all these are nothing but electron, protons, and all that stuff. Here and here it is the same thing. There is no really difference between a subject and object. This body and this body, same thing. A person can easily understand that. But with that intellect, that idea is kept in abeyance. And what is then that intellect is used for? How to generate more means of pleasure in this world. Not only that, how to then increase the desire in somebody. Instead of satisfying the desire, how to aggravate the desire. That is the science works for that. How the desire can be aggravated so that the pleasures can be pursued. So, this is what the great intellect works for. Isn't it a shame on our intellect that if even after this analysis that what is this world, simple to understand, sharp intellectually, sharp person will understand it quickly. Yes, it is all this lump of matter, same thing everywhere. There is nothing mine. It is but immediately I and mine, attractions and repulsions, they start playing, and intellect being their slave now starts working towards that, and thus that becomes the tragedy of human life. And let me quote from Faust and Goethe's beautiful work, and Swami Ranganathananji in his book, he quotes from his that poem where Faust is lamenting on this terrible fate of human life. We go to pursue those sense objects. Desires make us run after them. And they possess then those things. And now what happens? Our lamentation continues with possession. That is the problem. Let me quote. In many of world's literature, this human tragedy, which takes place everywhere, every day, has been depicted. And one author has depicted it very beautifully. That is the German dramatist and poet Goethe in his book Faust. Faust is the main character in that book. There is a section called Faust Soliloquy in the woods. Sitting in the forest, he is speaking to himself in a calm, quiet way. What has happened to me? He is thinking. Then comes this famous passage. Oh, for the broken state of man, I know our unfulfillment now. Thou gavest bliss, which brings me near and near to the gods, and gavest to the dark companion, whom I cannot rid me of, though with his scorn he breaks my pride, and in a single word, a breath, turns all my gifts and makes them nothing. He builds a wildfire in my heart, ablaze, till from desire I stumble to possession, and in possession languish from desire. Languishing in possession from desire, that is the tragedy of our life, friends. We get the desire, let me have this, and we run to possess those things. And then languish in those possessions. The desires are not satisfied. The desires keep on getting further aggravated. So therefore it is told that the intellect should not be allowed to become slave like this. A person wanting to lead this purposeful life directed to the goal. Therefore, must properly arrange these instruments. The sense organs should govern. They are superior. They should govern the objects. They should judge the objects. They should not fall for them. They should just judge them. Then the mind should ponder over all these possibilities that those objects generate, and the intellect should decide what should be done, what should be taken and what should be rejected. But if this is not cultivated conscientiously, then the behavior becomes different. The actual behavior then becomes as described here, that the objects, they decide. They pull the sense organs. Mind runs after them, and intellect has, it also doesn't perform its function. It becomes slave to these things. That is what we find in the world. And gradually it further grassifies into a compulsive, instinctive behavior. This problem we see that this is animal behavior. Animal life is an instinctive life. There is no gap called ponderance. The object is right in front and the animal just goes to grab it. This impulsive, compulsive behavior becomes a big problem in human life. And what is the solution for that? The solution is this proper guidance at this level. That look, what is superior to what? Your instruments are to be controlled by you. Let not become us become slaves of the instrument. It is not fault of the instrument, friends. It is not that if you have computer, you become slave to the computer. People think like that. Oh, let me not have TV or computer or this or that, then I will not become their slaves. You will become slave to some other instruments, that's all. The idea is not to have instruments. Instruments should be had. Good, very good. Nothing wrong in that. If you have instruments, very good. Make use of them. Let us remember, TV is for me. I am not for TV. If I get to the TV, glued to the TV, and forget everything, it is not fault of TV, friends. It is fault of me. I should be controlling that. It should be in my control. That is just a matter, just instrument. I should control that instrument. And the moment I forget this, the life becomes different. Then this whole chain becomes completely disturbed chain, or a wrongly joined, wrongly tuned chain. So the whole structure of personality becomes completely disoriented. So it is important to properly orient and integrate different aspects, different faculties of our personality, the body, the sense organs and motor organs, the mind, the intellect. All these need to be properly connected to each other. If you put the cart before the horses, what happens? The horses become useless, the cart become useless. But if they are properly tied, then, well, the horse also becomes useful, cart also becomes useful. So, this is what Bhagavad Gita is telling, that we have to tune our personality in this manner. And therefore it says that a yogi, what should a yogi do? He says, tasmad yasya mahabaho nigrihitani sarvashah. All these sense organs, bring them under control. This is to be done. It is nobody else is going to do it for us. It is we have to take up the cudgel, have the determination and practice for that. And with practice the success will come. It is, we need not become impatient. The success will come quicker than we think. But if we are not impatient, it is not at all an impossible task, and not a task that we are up against is a terrible, very difficult task. We do more difficult works in this world. Many, many difficult works are done. We send this spaceships to Mars. It's not a simple job, you see, that we can do. So can we not do comparatively this simpler work that brings such great results in our life? Our friend Aruni, he started just practicing a little bit of how to do some juggling trick with balls. And first he thought it is very difficult, but he started doing it and a few days now he can do it very well. So it is just a little practice. The things appear difficult, but this is the matter for practice. A determined practice has to be done. And when we do it, well, we can see the result for ourselves. It is a very simple thing. And he said to me that, you know, when I did it first, so much of joy came in my heart. Heart was kind of filled with joy. So even this minor real achievement, what has he done, you know, why the joy came? Not because he was able to do that juggling, because that juggling signified a control. That control was achieved, and thus that control gives us the joy. When we are able to control our instruments, then we can achieve something from them, and that is the reason for the joy. When we get control over all our body and mind. See, imagine what tremendous joy will come in one's life. So, this is what is told here, that the yogi whose mind is or whose intellect is established in wisdom, whose life therefore is also established in wisdom, what is the sign of that? That the person has a complete control over his or her sense organs and motor organs. It is told that, therefore, O mighty one, he whose senses are well controlled from their objects has steady wisdom. If we see the life of Sri Ramakrishna, the life of Sri Ramakrishna is important because that life was led in modern times, not some age-old this mythology needs to be studied for that. Sri Ramakrishna's life was led in our times when people studying in Western universities could examine him, could take photographs and understand that yes, these things are really possible. The tremendous control on every single tissue of his body and his mind, the thoughts in his mind, tremendous. Not only on his own mind, but if he wants to mold somebody's mind, perfect control in doing that also. Swami Vivekananda said that the great miracle that Sri Ramakrishna performed, the people perform various other types of miracles, but the miracle Sri Ramakrishna performs is that like potter gives shape to a lump of clay and makes pot out of it, Sri Ramakrishna can take anybody's mind and just shape it like the potter shaping a pot. So that is the control that he could establish. That is the sign of a person of steady wisdom. So the next verse is about how much difference the two lives are, how much different from each other the life that is steadfast in wisdom and ordinary non-steadfast life. In ignorance we cannot be steadfast, only in wisdom we can be steadfast. Ignorance keeps us kicking all around. So it is, where is the difference? That was how Arjuna's original question came out, that what are the manifest signs in the life of this person who is established in wisdom. Now, by contrast, it is described. First, it was shown that externally there is not much of a difference. But internally, the difference is tremendous. What is the difference? A very beautiful verse and very poetic. The charm of the poetry here is really great. Yanisha sarvabhutanam tasyam jagrati sanyami yasyam jagrati bhutani sanisha pashyato mune. Day and night difference. That which to all creatures is night is where the man of self-control is wide awake. And that in which the creatures are wide awake is night to the sage who sees. So much of difference. All these priorities of life completely change in this person. Because the perception is changed. If a person sees that there are so many nice things right in front of me, let me grab them. The person keeps on making attempt to grab them. The life gets directed towards that. But a person knows that it is only a picture. It is not really there. Then that person does not get dragged towards them. The actions become different. So a person established in wisdom knows that there is nothing to be achieved from the different objects in the world. All the truth is within us. All the bliss is within us. There is nothing that is worth achieving from any external objects. And thus the life becomes completely different. This is the day and night difference. During the night, the people, normal people, do not see. And those things are not visible to them. And during the day, they see. But this whole thing gets changed when the wisdom awakens. The common people feel that these objects of senses, they are worth possessing and start running after them. This person, he is called here Pashyataha Mune, very beautiful word. The sage who sees. the sage who sees, as if we don't see. Somebody can ask this question. Pam may say, what do you mean, Swami? Do we not see? We also have eyes. We also see. Yes, we all see. But do we see the truth? We see that which really is not. Can it be called seeing? If we are seeing a rope as snake, are we seeing? We are not seeing. It is the truth is not apparent to us. That is, therefore, not the real seeing at all. That is why Jesus says that let those, what a beautiful, what a poetic phrase, that let those who have eyes to see, let them see. Those who have eyes to see, let them see. As if, what the eyes are for? Why should this statement? Those who have eyes, let them see. So, obviously eyes are meant for seeing. Let them see means, yeah, use your eyes to see the truth, not that which is unreal. It is the passing show is what the people established in ignorance or running about in ignorance, buffeted in ignorance. They think that they are real and the life hovers around that with all intellect, razor sharp intellect. Can solve many math problems, can decide many business these things deals, can do many, many intellectually difficult tasks. That intellect also, what does it do? Just keeps on running after these non-existent things, the names and forms which do not really exist. This intellect keeps on running after that. Whereas, see, this person, for that the perception has changed. These objects are not worth possessing anymore because they are going to be taken away. They are not real. Earlier it was told that raga and dvesha, attraction and repulsion, that governs the ordinary life. In Patanjali's yoga aphorism, therefore these two are called very prominent torments of us. Attraction and repulsion. The objects keep us attracting and repelling. Constantly being tossed from here to there, hit constantly like a tennis ball from this court to that court. That game is played with us by these objects, here to there. It is, we get attracted to some object, and as when we get attracted and get there, immediately a repulsion arises. And like the tennis ball goes to that court, again it is hit to this court. So we are again kicked from there to the other side. Attraction and repulsion becomes torments because of that. If there is just one thing that is attractive, and if I go there, yes, it remains attractive, how nice it would have been. Just we read from Faust that we go there thinking that it is attractive, get there and realize that it is not attractive. In fact, it becomes repulsive and we are then thrown to the other side. This is why they become torments. A person who doesn't see keeps on getting shuttled between such attractions and repulsions. The person who sees knows that this is not really attraction at all, therefore does not go for them. Look at what a common person, even a person who is of very high intellect, they seek the earthly things. Who is more intelligent and more successful? Who makes more money? Simple thing. The one who, is it not Triveni? The one who earns more money is more successful. The one, some people are not interested in money, and they think that getting name and fame, achieving name and fame is good. So they run after those things. Let me become very famous. So they spend money to become famous. We see that in elections they spend money to become more and more famous, so that people can give votes to them. So the money is spent there. It is people think that let me become more famous. That is the pursuit of some people. But for a person who sees that this is all illusion, this is only going to give me more and more botheration, more trouble in life. It is not going to give me what I am really seeking. Does not care for them, as if he doesn't see them at all. Night. Night for him. What is day for us? We see those things. Name, fame, money, sense pleasures. We see them, run after them. This fellow doesn't see them at all. Not worth possessing at all. That is why dark. This person doesn't see them as worth having. In fact, doesn't notice them at all. Seeing in the sense of noticing. That doesn't have any, the mind doesn't get drawn to it. So therefore, as if it is not seen, it is night for him. And that which that person is looking at as most important, God is most important. So that is what other people are not concerned with, that. That is night for them. For this person, God is everything. God needs to be sought. God is to be realized. That is everything. That is the perception of this person. That is night for ordinary person. Where is God? What is the use of God? Tell me, can God make my bank balance better? As if he doesn't make, he is not there. So that is our idea of God. What God does to make the world better. That is not the question for this person at all. This world is neither good nor bad. There is no question. The phrase better world is itself for this person a meaningless phrase. Because who is to decide what is better? Who is to decide? There is no definition of better world. From some angle, somebody says that this is better world. Other people would say, no, that is not better world. This is better world. So, God is not at all seen by this person in that light. God is truth. God is real. So, whether that God makes the world beautiful or not, forget about it. Sri Ramakrishna was told once, there were people who were discussing how the God is so gracious, and God brings food to us, God clothes us, God gives us all these things, and we're glorifying. Sri Ramakrishna said, well, you say that God is our father, and then if a father gives food to his children, do you think the father is gracious? That is what the father's job is. If a father is not providing food to his kids, then who is going to feed them? It is not graciousness of father, it is father's job. Why call that God as gracious God? God is our very own, he explained them, told them. that God is the truth, God is our very own, God is our love. Love God for God's sake. And don't ask of God, and don't belittle yourself by seeking something from God. Seek God. This person who is steady in wisdom knows that that is only thing worth seeking. Nothing else is worth seeking in this world. It is like for the gopis, Lord Krishna was all they wanted, nothing else. Lord alone is going to be the position, nothing else. When Jesus said to those fishermen, "Come on, follow me," they just dropped the nets, started following. Somebody said, "Let me first bury my dead father and then come." And Jesus said, "Well, let the dead bury the dead." Jesus was a man of tremendous renunciation. Sometimes we overlook that fact in the religion that is caught only in socialities, do not bring out these great teachings of Jesus, that what is important in this life? God is important. It is, that is the soul, the real only possession that can bring peace in our life. Nothing else. So this person's vision is like that. Day and night difference. What normal people see as real, this person sees as unreal. What normal people feel like worth running after, this person says, no, they are not worth running after at all. It is not deluded by that. You may bring lot of nice shows to him, and this is very beautiful, this is very nice. That person is not interested in that. People brought microscope for Sri Ramakrishna to see through. First he showed very childlike enthusiasm. Things look like that, big like that. Yes. And so it was arranged that they would bring a microscope for Sri Ramakrishna to see. But Sri Ramakrishna went into samadhi. Well, as soon as they told him, "See this microscope," he showed no interest in that at all. Mind went straight into God. So, it is like that what is worth possessing here? All those tiny things that we care for, that this person never bothers about. What is there? They are all anyway unreal. It is one of our Swamis used to be the kitchen manager. And once we used to tell him that, "What, you don't bring proper these things, all these no fruits and no this, what, at least bring some bananas." So he of course had his own constraints, he had limited money to spend and all that. So he would decide by what is more pricey, what is less pricey, and accordingly he used to bring. He wouldn't care what to our shouts. So when we said, he used to diplomatically handle everything. So when we said, "Why did you not buy bananas today?" He said, "Oh, the bananas in the market were not good. This is not the good season for bananas, you know." Then we said, "Oh, if not bananas, you should have brought at least nice apples." Well, he said, "They were not available there, so I had to go a long distance, I was tired, didn't bring." Then we said that, "Well, you should buy at least papaya, grapes," and we started taking the names of this fruit and that fruit. So he himself then started adding more names of more fruits. And we said, no, not to that extent. Some fruits were very costly and not readily available. We said, no, you don't need to go to that extent. He said, well, if we have to just take the names, we can go any extent. Do you think you are going to get any of those? And when you are not going to get any of them, either way, so while taking the names, why should we show miserliness there? Let us take the names of all those fruits. So just as taking the names of them, they doesn't bring us anything, similarly, all these possessions in the world, they are not going to add even an iota of happiness in our life, friends. This person sees that and therefore does not run after them. He knows God alone. He is real. That is the position. Life is all guided towards that meaningful search. And not running after mirage to get water. It is useless. So, when you find God, He knows everything becomes meaningful. If not, then you do not get anything. That which is going to vanish, that which is not real, how can you get it? It is foolishness to run after those things. This person understands that. So that is the day and night difference. It is ordinary people see that names and forms and running after those names and forms or running away from them, that is their life. That is day for them. In fact, heyday for them. It is for this person, that is not at all the matter of concern at all. What is there to be obtained from here? Nothing. Sri Ramakrishna's nephew, although he used to stay with Sri Ramakrishna all the time, used to serve Sri Ramakrishna all the time, his mind was attached to all the worldly possessions. So, when Sri Ramakrishna saw that he is running after all this wealth and was requesting Sri Ramakrishna to use some of his influence and power to get money, Sri Ramakrishna said that had it been real, you know, his name was Hridu, Sri Ramakrishna used to call him Hridu. Hridu, had this world been real, I would have made you all your city, all your that village of Kamarpukur, I would have covered it with gold. You know. But it is not real, what is the use? Don't run after unreal things. So this is the difference between the two lives. What a radical difference from inside. Outside, no difference. That fellow also has the same nose and eyes and ears like we. Not that there is a big halo around that person. Don't try to judge if a person is really established in wisdom by trying to look whether that person is emanating some kind of halo or glow or whatever. That is not the sign of wisdom. It is this life, that what are the priorities in that person's life? That is what is shown here. And in the next class we shall see then that this person, how does he use his sense organs then? And does he have then no contact with the objects? No, not that. He has the sense organs, motor organs. He or she deals with the objects. But not like us, not like being slave to them. We shall see that very beautiful verse. Apuryamanam achala pratishtham. Samudramapapravishanti yadvat. So, today we don't have time. Next time we shall study that beautiful verse and the remaining verses of this chapter. Next Friday, will be the last class on Friday class on Bhagavad Gita before we close for the summer break. So we shall complete this reading of the second chapter if God so wishes. Any questions? Yes, Jamuna Bhai. Both are functional there. Actually, if one aspect is functioning, that means both aspects are functioning. The two aspects are shown only to make us understand. Not that you can find only one of them functioning any time. In who? Which person? There is no Maya functioning there, neither the covering power nor the projecting power. None of them is functioning there. The Maya is not functioning there like this. None of these aspects is functioning there. It is for a person who is trying to be like that, Maya is functioning again. In both its powers, but both its powers are now becoming what is known as the Vidya Maya. It is not whether the covering power or the projecting power, but both these powers now are for the release. The bondage is one act of Maya, releasing is also another act of Maya. So this is this person who is trying to become like that. Maya is still functional in both its aspects, but in the releasing mode. That some instruments have this mode and that mode. So here the binding mode and releasing mode. Yes. No, mind is also a product of Maya. Mind, if you see as an object, as an instrument, is also a product of Maya. It is much deeper than mind. Yeah, because they mind becomes functionally different there. Mind adapts to the Vidya Maya rather than adapting to the... So that is why the freeing and bondage both are the functions of mind. It is when the mind adapts to Avidya Maya, person gets bound. When adopts to Vidya Maya, gets freed from the bondage. Okay.
How do we change Avidya Maya
and
Vidya Maya?
All this lecture was about that, is it not? That how to change that by controlling the sense organs, by keeping the goal of life in front of you, determinedly doing the spiritual practices, that all these things, they help us to convert this Maya, Avidya Maya and Vidya Maya, that the conscientious efforts are to be put in for that. Just as one puts conscientious efforts to achieve certain things in the world, let me get this university education. One puts conscientious efforts. Let me become a master from this university. One puts efforts in that. Now similarly the efforts have to be put in with that determination and dedication. to get freed from these bondages. Just as if we are callous in our university studies, we do not get good grades there. Similarly, here also we do not get success if we are callous about these practices. So, that is how Maya, Avidya Maya means the binding Maya, and Vidya Maya, the freeing Maya. Then both Mayas, once you become free, now it is a different state. That person is now not under the scope of any scriptures. That is an enlightened being. There is no Maya, either Vidya Maya or Avidya Maya there. Both those thorns, in the example of that Sri Ramakrishna used to give, that if there is one thorn has gone into your heel, then how to take it out? Then you take another thorn, take that first thorn out, and then when that thorn is also taken out, throw them both away. So that is this person who is fully established in wisdom. There is no Maya there. But to get to that state, yes, the Maya, you have to therefore put yourself in a different bondage. Instead of being bound by these different attractions and repulsions, get bound by the spiritual disciplines and practice them. That appears as bondage. It is a bondage. Sometimes a rebellious mood comes, that why should I do that? Is it not again a bondage? After all, the self is free. Is it not? Why should I do spiritual practice? All we just know that it is a foolish prattle, but we indulge in that. So, this bondage is to be taken up to get rid of that bondage, and then both need to be discarded. That is how we all can get the Vidya Maya.